Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
It's time for season 7 of Unspun.
I can't believe it. Season 7. What are we talking about today, Jody?
We have so much to catch up on, George. It's been a long go of it. We got to talk about, oh my goodness, what happened with Kevin Falcon and BC United, now with John Rustad and the BC Conservatives? Where does that leave David Eby? We got to talk federal politics, Jagmeet Singh. Oh, and don't forget the U.S. as well.
Get things started.
Bro. How do we take the spin out of everything that's happened, George? Welcome back to Unspun Podcast, season 7.
I'm feeling a bit rusty here.
But not rust daddy.
Nice.
I mean. Good. Okay, let's talk about what happened.
Always good with the segues, Jody.
What happened, George?
I think we predicted it, didn't we? I think we talked about some. I think I said by Labor Day he'd make a decision, and he did right before Labor Day, and he had to because the ballots were going to get printed and all that stuff. Where are we at? I mean, I have to be. Full disclosure, I've been working on the Jamie Steins campaign for the BC United at doing his advertising. So I have some connection to the BC United. So I can only say so many things, I guess. But
so let me explain to our thank you to our viewers and listeners, Unspun Podcast, as we mentioned, going into season 7 here. We're talking about what has flipped provincial politics in British Columbia on its head in the last few weeks with Kevin Falcon, the leader of the BC United Party, deciding he will not be running in the election. Of course, there are a lot of people, George, who don't even know that there's a provincial election happening on October 19th, but there is. So let's be aware of that first and foremost. BC United, formerly the BC Liberal Party, now finding itself in no end of turmoil here. And the BC Conservatives, who were surging in the polls, some say perhaps it's about confusion with the federal Conservative Party and an alignment there, which is not the case, but good confusion. The spin works. We've talked about that as a machine. Every poll was showing that the BC Conservative Party was surging and almost in some polling passing the NDP in popularity in this province. And pundits were saying there's no way that these two parties will come together and work together in BC United and the Conservatives because Falcon and Rustad had no love lost between the two of them. In fact, there was a lot of conversations about how much they despised one another. They would never find middle ground. This is what I'm paraphrasing from all the pundits that I've spoken to over the last few months where we've been on hiatus here on the podcast. And they're the NDP and David Eby just carrying on towards, you know, what they thought might be a very smooth path to, at the very least, a minority government in British Columbia, if not a majority. And now, I think what's important, as you say, full disclosure, you've had some inner working, so we don't want you to break any NDAs or anything. But when we're looking at what is before us here provincially in British Columbia, as a former Vancouver City Councillor, as a strategist, as somebody who understands PR and marketing at Curve Communications, that's what you do for a living. What do you see happening now from this point forward? What's happening now?
Yeah, well, and we can go back into we talked a lot about this over the years, certainly on the changing the name thing for BC United was their absolute undoing. Terrible idea. I've always said that. Terrible, terrible. Because, you know, NPA in Vancouver, which I was a part of, political party in Vancouver, been around forever, always was fighting this issue of changing names. And it's the worst thing you can ever do. I know there's other parties that do start up and do succeed, but it's very seldom you see a party change its name and succeed. Just because that's a brand. It's a brand. This is what I do for a living. Branding is such a very expensive process to go through. If you're a private sector business and you change your name, the chances of, even if you change your logo, it creates havoc sometimes. So you have to be so careful. And you have to put so much effort and so much time into that process. People are paid millions and millions and millions of dollars to change a brand. That kind of branding and process did not happen. It was a vote on a bunch of names that somebody came up with. and they voted on this one, and BC Liberals wasn't, you know, it just anyways. So as a result,
they thought they could take off. They thought they could take off the negativity that came with BC Liberal Party, and they did not. In fact, what they did is they lost the people that confused them with the federal Liberals and kind of came from the middle and went, oh, I always vote Liberal.
Or mushy middle.
Because mushy middle. Yep. And John Rustad and the BC Conservatives. So John Rustad was ousted from BC United for some of his views that remain controversial, but moderate compared to some other of in the BC Conservative Party when it comes to anti-science and disinformation and climate denialism, which is what Rustad finds himself at the forefront, you know, sitting down with the likes of Jordan Peterson, very controversial interview and things said there. We could literally talk about this forever. But what I want to point out is that Rustad deciding that he was going to become the leader of the BC Conservative Party, he did exactly the opposite of the Falcon name change to BC United. He went to a brand that was already there, that existed in a popularity confusion, right? He's proven that, you know, if you strike gold at the right moment, the idea that everybody can get rich off that gold is enough for everybody to come on board. That's what I feel like, that analogy. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure. The brand was there already for him.
Yeah,
he took some people with him, and then more and more as we got closer, you know, people like Lauren Dirksen, big, you know, people who are, you know, high up in the BC Liberal Party, takes, you know, Alanis Sturco, these, that started, that really pushed that trend. That really was the beginning of the end. So now we're here in a situation, BC United, dead in the water. Some of these candidates have flipped over. That's still a negotiation. There's still people out there that may still flip. There's still some people that are coming out of the woodwork for the BC Conservatives that media are uncovering through looking through past tweets. And this is what I tell my
no vetting time. Happened. Like, whoa.
You know, when you run generally, I don't know if the Conservatives do this in BC, you have to export all of your tweets from history, all of your Facebook posts, everything. You export it, put it in a folder, send it to them. They go through it all manually to see if there's anything weird. And if there are some things that are weird, if they're not like crazy, they talk to you about how you're going to respond to this. This is the vetting process that I've been through and should go through for a political party. This is why I tell my kids, don't say stupid things on social media, because one day, you know, you might, it's just don't do
it's
it.
It's going to come bite you in the ass. It's gonna haunt
you. So now we have a situation where, you know, you touched on it with the federal Liberals, this mushy middle. Where are they going to land? You know, in my riding, I've got Melissa DeGenova running for the BC Conservatives and Terry Young running for the NDP, who was a member of the NPA with me, and his wife is was an NPA. Like, I'm confused by he's NDP now and was given that. So I've got a Conservative and an NDP that, you know, it's no surprise that Melissa is the Conservative candidate. And then there's, I don't know if there's a Green candidate. So I think it's going to be really interesting where I don't think people should underestimate that this won't be just like in 2013 when the BC Liberals suddenly won the election. Everybody, what happened? That I think in the end of the day, the possibility is that people will go to the polls on October 19th and go, I can't vote for BC Conservatives. I can't do it. And where am I going to put my vote? It'll go to the NDP or the Greens. There's going to be a lot of people like that. They may not be telling us. They may not be being polled. And I'm sure if you look back at 2013 in that campaign, that nobody thought they were going to win against Adrian Dix, the BC Liberals. And then
Cruising Park, could kick a dog. Yep.
You know how they did it. They focused on 50 locations, 50 ridings, 52 ridings, and they put all their money and energy, and they didn't. They said, we're not going to win the other ones. We're just going to assume we're not going to win those ones. We're just going to win the ones that we can focus on that will get us the majority. I can't imagine that the BC or that the NDP are not doing that exact same strategy right now, going, okay, where can we win?
Where do we need to win?
We can win the whole island. We can win. Yeah. We can't win the Fraser Valley, probably. We can probably win Surrey if we do some work. And we can win everything pretty much on the other side of the Fraser, all the way to the city of Vancouver, except for maybe a couple of ridings. So that's the math there. So we're not going to win the North. We're not going to win, you know, maybe we'll win one area of the Coopies. That's the math they're doing. And they have, I don't know if you've noticed, they're doing a lot of announcements in specific locations these days. The NDP, this is the benefit of being in power and in office. Right. You can use until the writs dropped all the governmental systems to make announcements about Site C. They did that last week in Chilliwack. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're talking about, you know, they're talking about big issues that they've done, they've succeeded at, or launching these things so that they can, because that's not coming out of their books. It's not coming out of NDP's finances. So right. It's a very good strategy when you're in power to be able to do that, because you hold all the power. So that's what they're doing right now. That's all they'll do. And then when the 19th hit, I don't know how much money the NDP have, but they're going to have, we're just going to be inundated with campaigns, because the BC Conservatives didn't have a ton of money set aside for advertising. And if they didn't book it, and they haven't got a strategy for digital, they don't have a, you know, and if the ridings don't have the money, because all the BC United candidates, you know, have, most of them had lots of money set aside. Because
right.
The candidates and the teams and the boards were all, have been in place forever. And so they've been fundraising and raising money, so that all these locations have all this money. The BC Conservatives don't have that kind of money, and they can't raise that kind of money that fast. So the BC NDP are going to outspend, I would say, the BC Conservatives. Now, the BC Conservatives are getting a lot of money, but we have limits. So you can't just give them $10 million.
No. This is not America. This is not right. American politics, which, right. You know what, we're going to come back to federal politics here in Canada, but I do want to jump to the United States a little here, because what you just laid out sounds eerily familiar in what we're seeing in the United States when it comes to really targeted, because this particular election cycle is going to come down to a handful of counties. It might be, you know, because the popular vote is one thing, but the Electoral College is something completely different. And we've talked a lot about that. And when we left off, when last we spoke on Unspun Podcast in season 6, there was no candidate for President Kamala Harris. There was no Tim Walz. There was no J.D. Vance. And please, oh my God, I almost looked at Brian. I'm like, maybe we should get married. Maybe I should take your name. Because Jody Vance and J.D. Vance was awfully close. Oh my God, my Twitter just blew up with that. But nonetheless, what you just said about, you know, they call it a war chest, or a, you know, campaign chest down in the U.S.
Yeah.
When you talked about, you know, BC United had loads of money, the candidates had loads of money, and then the Conservatives don't, but the NDP certainly do comparatively. Yeah. One of the reasons early days, taking the spin out, why Kamala Harris was an important candidate to tap to replace Joe Biden when he decided he wasn't going to run, was because she would be able to take the $100 million that Joe Biden already had in his war chest for campaigning. And everybody's like, "Ooh, that's a really important number. It's really important." She's raised $500 million more. And meanwhile, Donald, I'm getting emails from Donald Trump saying, "Please donate to me."
Yeah. Oh, you are?
I am. I got one this morning.
I have old email. I don't know how they get these emails. I have emails that are very, like, they're just for junk, my own junk mail thing that I create.
Yeah.
And somehow I'm on all these lists. How do they do that?
See?
I mean, what are they doing?
I don't know how they do that.
My Google Gmail to them, because that
right.
Not public. It's not, you know, anyways. Yeah.
But no, the targeting is specific. It's like the blue wall, or it's Arizona and Georgia, and, you know, the purpley states, and what we're seeing. I mean, yesterday, did you see this? Liz Cheney is now not just endorsing, but vocally, like, "I will be voting for Kamala Harris."
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Considering who her dad was, it's, you know, unthinkable. But yeah, and if you look at a map of America, and actually, if you look at a map of BC, it's kind of similar, because you've got this, if you look at the map, it's the opposite. Well, it's the same in a way, because it's conservative, or in the previous BC United, before that, Soak Reds and BC Liberal. You know, the entire 90% of the actual geographical area is on the right of center. Yet the lower mainland and the Vancouver Island and Southern Island, NDP, left wing, small.
And you need this to win.
America, it's like California, you know, they've got, you know, the West Coast, couple of dots here and there, a little bit of the East Coast, you know, not much. It's interesting to see it. And just otherwise, it's just like
this swath of red. But it's so interesting to see. Did you watch the DNC, the Democratic National Convention? Yes. Right. And watching
like religiously, I was kind of, you know,
I'm the same as Amanda. I was soaking it all up. Well, I mean, it's a big deal for women. I got to say, it's different for women when people are like, "You're Canadian. Why are you spending so much time?" Because it's about women's rights, because your body autonomy is a big deal. And, you know, aside from the fact that this likely might be the first female president of the United States, which is a big deal in its own right. But as a woman, as women, we're watching, right? Oh, we got to get to that. But that, just before we move to the predictions right now and the polling, there is no spin when you stand on that stage at the Democratic National Convention as a lifelong Republican, like Adam Kinzinger did, who like stood on that stage and said, you know, this man is a threat. And I found that so powerful.
Yeah.
It might have been the most powerful part of the entire thing. And there were some pretty cool moments, but there was also another, and oh my God, is it John Giles, the mayor of Mesa, Arizona? He was there as well. You know, staunch Republican.
Yeah.
These are, and George, I got to say, I want to say it feels too late. And yet at the same time, I think the timing might be perfect, because watching good people now be like, you know what? We're in trouble here if this man takes office again.
Momentum is everything. And peaking too soon is not good either.
Right. So
you know, I think we went on hiatus that week and all the craziness happened in America. And people are emailing us going, do a show on this, you know, but it's, you know, we don't do a lot of American politics. And when we do, we try to make it relevant to how it relates to Canada, which we'll get to Canada in a second too, because we got
and it's relevant to it.
Federal stuff going on.
Right.
Yeah, totally. If you look at data and, you know, I do this, you know, my training with Mike Wilson on the Campaign University, and we talk mostly about U.S. politics, but we try to make it relevant to it. It's mostly how you research ridings, how do you plan for it, or, you know, wherever you are. And it could be anything you're running for, but the process is always the same. It's always the same in a democracy. It's, you just got to go through that process to win. And then momentum and the rising tide raises all boats is the key. And so
show that book.
Yeah, exactly. And so this guy, you can't see, if you're listening, you can't see this, but this is the book by Alan Lichtman, predicting the next president, the keys, and that's what he calls it. There's 13 keys to the White House. And this one is from 2016. He has predicted every election since 1980 for who is going to be president correctly. And people will fight him on the 2000 election and Al Gore, because he predicted Al Gore would win. But in fact, he has had it verified several times that if they had actually gone back and counted the broken chads and all that stuff in Florida, Gore would have won in 2000. So he was correct in 2000. And he's adamant about that. Other than that,
and he famously called Donald Trump to be the next president. And everybody said, no, there's no way a reality TV show host is going to be the next president of the United States. Lo and behold. So today in the New York Times, Alan Lichtman said on video, a video by Naima Raza and Adam Westbrook, all of the keys that are involved in his decision making, lays it all out. The video itself is about 7 minutes long. I got to the meat of it and I got it for you. So people who are watching.
Harris or Trump, the prophet of presidential elections, is ready to call the race. And the winner is, Jody?
Kamala Harris.
Harris.
He said Kamala Harris will be the next president of the United States. And there are two keys, foreign policy and one other thing. There are two keys that have yet to...
Incumbency.
Right.
She's not incumbent, but she's kind of incumbent. So it's a tricky one.
And he said, even if both of those went to Trump, Harris would still win. So he's ready to make his prediction a little bit earlier than expected.
Yeah, he always does it after the DNC, but he usually does it a week or so after Labor Day. So he's early.
Yeah.
And if you go to his YouTube channel, he has this hilarious YouTube channel with his son, who they co-host it.
Yeah.
It's very nerdy, but if you're into it, I'd recommend it. So
let's get nerdy and geeky. Let's get nerdy and geeky in federal politics, because it's almost as though, you know, what we've seen happen with Kevin Falcon stepping down, John Restad now surging. We've got the NDP going to need to pivot because the vote is no longer split on the right. Then we look south of the border, and nobody could have predicted the rather monumental, sudden rise, vibe, whatever you want to call it, joy, whatever, the things that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are capitalizing on that Americans seem more than ready for. And then you bring in what happened this week in federal politics and Jagmeet Singh basically doing the rip it up. He did that on video. He's ripping it up, ripping up the agreement.
Politicians and their silly antics. Bring in, anyways, the things I've seen in politics, like, you're going to do that, are you? Okay. This is all strategy. So we know there's got to be an election in the next year. It has to be called.
Has to be.
And, they have
supply and confidence agreement.
Supply and confidence agreement with the Liberals held up until this day. But now Jagmeet's got to go, okay, the NDP have to sit there and go, okay, Jack Layton got us to 50 seats or whatever it was, right? So that's probably our measure of success that we know we can maybe get to. And so they need to build his brand, because right now he's just being the, you know, co-conspirator with the Liberals in their agenda for the last 5 years. So four years, with their minority government. He didn't go so far, and Pierre Poilievre was trying to make him go, let's call the election. Let's call a non-confidence vote. Let's do this. If you really want to do this. But of course he doesn't, because what he wants to do over the next year is build the NDP brand. So just like we're talking about, you know, brand, this is what this is about. And the NDP is a brand, but they've been kind of invisible. But he knows, they know, if we do this right, and the Conservatives can, people will want to know where to put their center or left of center vote. They may not want to go Liberal. Now, that's not to say that, that's assuming that that Justin Trudeau will be running as leader, and I don't think he will be. I'd call it now that he's going to resign soon, and call it a leadership race. And there you have a very similar situation to America. Whoever becomes the Liberal leader, and if they have the kind, and no, this person doesn't exist right now, you can't predict who it will be. There are lots of rumors, but nobody's standing out. That doesn't mean that person can't suddenly stand out. That person comes in and like, wow. And that is, I predict, will be what will happen next. If they do choose a leader, it better be somebody that does pull a Kamala Harris and just, you know, inspires people. Because generally, Canadians are centrists. And, you know, the
right now, there's nowhere for them to go. There's nowhere for the centrists to go right now in federal politics. And that felt like, and thank you for taking the segue and absolutely explaining it beautifully, because that's what it felt like after the debate where Joe Biden froze, and, you know, and then George Clooney's telling everybody that, you know, Joe Biden's got to step down. And frankly, here in BC, where people are like, we're just going to keep splitting this vote on the right, said many people in the center, wishing that Rustad would come to align with the more center right party in British Columbia to give that mushy middle, you know, a place to go that isn't the NDP if they're feeling disenfranchised with. It's interesting how politically that seems to be the new spin or the new pathway to power. And we saw it in the UK and we saw it in France. Sometimes you think you've got it in the bag and you don't, because I think, like what you said about, you know, people perhaps going in your riding and saying, listen, I'm a fiscally conservative individual, but the BC Conservatives are too conservative for me. And if my choice is between the Conservatives and the NDP, I'm going to tell everybody I'm a conservative. And then when I get in the voting booth, I'm going to vote NDP, which in the US, I see a lot of Republicans who are telling their friends that they'd never vote for a Democrat. And when they walk into that polling booth, are going to pull the lever for Kamala Harris. What does that look like in Canada federally is the question now. Who will be a candidate, to your point of, I don't think that Justin Trudeau will be the candidate for the Liberals. I think he realizes, I would hope that someone has told him that he cannot win this.
I would predict if there was an election today, the Conservatives would win. But in six months, I think if the NDP do what Jagmeet's planning, build their brand, that they could get those seats away from the Liberals, not from the, and they might win some seats that might've gone Conservative if they get good candidates and all that kind of stuff. But you could see the possibility of a coalition block NDP or block NDP Liberal just to keep Conservatives out. As long as the Conservatives don't get a majority, a block NDP coalition or a block NDP Liberal coalition could be a possibility. And who would be the, who, if it was, if it was Justin Trudeau he would probably not be the chosen leader. It probably would be Jagmeet Singh. And that's what Jagmeet's thinking right now. If I can build up this NDP base, get us to 40, 50 seats, then and take those away from the Liberals, that gives me the power to go into the meet the bloc and say, okay, let who you know seem to, I don't know where they are on the spectrum anymore. I think they're left wing, kind of, even though they started out as an offshoot of the Conservatives.
Yeah.
They seem like they're more, they're leaning center to left. So yeah. You know, I think Jagmeet could find a way to work with them, which, you know, you think back to that election that Kim Campbell lost and the Conservatives had two seats and the bloc became the official opposition. Do you remember that?
I do. That was separate our wild.
Had became the official opposition. So weird. So
wild.
You know, that's what I. But that's why I think Trudeau's got to go, based on data, and the Liberals need to take him on his rowboat like they did with his dad. Unless and here's what might happen though. Then an election, a snap election, does happen, and they're stuck with Justin Trudeau, and that's kind of what Pierre Poilievre's hoping, that there's a way. There's something so crazy that happens in the House that Jagmeet can't possibly support it. And then the non-confidence vote is put on the floor. And
that triggers everything.
Otherwise, his base would be, what are you doing? So Trudeau's got to, the Liberals have to be very, very careful about
very careful
to the House over the next few months so they don't get themselves into trouble.
Yeah, maybe some cookies for the NDP as well. A little like, hey, how about we use some of those policies you were looking to do? We've only got 3 minutes left to go here, and we want to keep it under 30 minutes. Season 7, we're working hard to just keep it concise. Your fastest 30 minutes in politics, Unspun Podcast. But before we go, just one little tidbit about what you're seeing happening in Vancouver politics, especially with the stranger attacks, the unprovoked attacks, the catch and release, what we're seeing happen, and how our municipal government is or is not managing that.
Well, the press conference that the mayor held, well, it's the first time I've seen him wear a collared shirt and a jacket and fancy glasses too in Vancouver. Ken Sim all dressed up yesterday for this press conference. I guess it was serious enough for him to put some proper, you know, attire on for as a politician. But I thought the police chief in Vancouver was very strong too, saying, look, we need to, and I hate, you know, I hate that look, but that's...
You got me, but yeah, he did say that.
He did. They all did. Our most hated term. But the issue is we got to change. This is a provincial and federal issue, really. It's whether we change the way, because institutionalization is really hard to do now. You can't just.
But this guy had 60 interactions with law enforcement. 60.
So this is a federal issue.
This is a federal issue. So
it's a federal issue. And then the issue of healthcare is provincial. So. Yeah. You can say as much as you want as the mayor, but you can't solve this problem if the province, the federal government's not on board with dealing with crime and healthcare, mental healthcare. And neither of them seem to be doing anything in the way that's going to change what we're seeing on the streets of Vancouver, which yesterday was horrific. And literally, I was 15 minutes earlier. I'd been on that exact block parking.
Terrible.
Moby to go to a morning meeting. There were some people that are out there that looked kind of crazy on the streets at that time, 6:40, 6:50 in the morning yesterday.
Man is dead and another has a severed hand by somebody who had a complete mental break and has had 60 plus interactions with law enforcement. Some's got to give. Absolutely not enough being done at the provincial level on healthcare. Absolutely not enough being done at the federal level on this catch and release and bail and all of this. But also those running for those offices and using these as wedge issues, also not giving solutions. Anybody pretending that they could fix this is absolutely pulling the wool over your eyes and spun. Right.
You got to tell me how much that's going to cost.
How much is it going to cost for you to fix it? We got 1 minute, so we got to tell people where to find us. Unspun Podcast will be on Facebook now.
Pressure's on. I'm going to try and put our podcast on Facebook, on X, on YouTube, and all the audio channels. That's my goal today.
He's doing it, baby. He's doing it. I thank you, George. I will be here to help in any way that I can. You're very good at this. And you are also very prolific on Twitter. I'm going to always call it Twitter. You are George_Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance. Jody with a Y. Not JD Vance.
Yeah.
Jody Vance.
You're just hoping for a loss. You're hoping for a loss.
Oh my just God. I need him to go away. Anyway. All good. Say goodbye, George.
Bye-bye.